So morning everyone.
Good morning.
So I'm going to do a bit of spiel first, then there'll be a bit of time for discussion and questions, and then we'll end the morning in huddles, just having a bit more time to talk with, you know, a smaller group of people about the material and about anything that we'd like to take into the week to practice. Which might be you carrying on with things that you've been doing to do with integration and mindfulness, which you're just finding really helpful and you want to carry on with. Or it might be you pick up on some new ideas, new suggestions to do with positive emotion. Yeah. But we'll see. But we'll make sure there's time for that at the end of the morning. And then we'll end by chanting the mantra, the Buddhist mantra, as we usually do. So as Amarapushpa said, we're on this journey. We're using Maitreya Bandhu's book, The Journey and the Guide. And he's exploring these different qualities that we need in order to live a more deep life, a more aware life, a more alive life, a life of more wisdom and compassion. And the first quality that we looked at was integration, mindfulness. We just spent 3 weeks looking at that. And now we're moving on to positive emotion. So, first of all, we're just going to define our terms, which is always a good thing to do to start with. So, Maitreya Bandhu, he actually says, in some ways, the term positive emotion is a bit wishy-washy. Yeah. So he actually uses this word, kusala karma, which translates as something like skillful action. So he's trying to kind of get at what we really mean by positive emotion is a skillful action. Yeah. So we'll just unpack that a little bit. So this word kusala, usually translated as skillful. Yeah. And it means that which is helpful, that which is ethical, that which is kind of good and noble. Yeah. But it's interesting, in the Buddhist tradition they do use this word skillful. So it has certain connotations, doesn't it, of a skill, of something that we can develop, something that we can learn. And something which isn't, it's not just black and white. It's something that we get better at over time, or something that we have to apply skillfully in any given situation, rather than being definite wrong and right answers. It's like we're trying to learn a skill, which we then have to apply in the kind of complexity of life, as it were. Yeah. So it's interesting, this word skillful and the connotations of that word. Yeah. So there's this little quote in the book, Maitreya Bandhu says, sometimes we'd rather be right than helpful. Yeah. Sometimes we'd rather, you know, we just want to be right. I'm right. Yeah. So that's not what this means. It's being helpful. It's what's helpful, what's appropriate. What's kind of intelligent? What's kind? What's human? What's ethical in this situation that I find myself in? And then karma, the word karma, literally means something like action. Yeah. But it's important to realise that it's not just physical actions, it's actions of body, actions of speech, and actions of mind. So from the Buddhist point of view, what we're doing, you know, with our body, how we act in that sense, what we do with our voice, how we speak, how we communicate, what we do with our mind, it's all action. Yeah, from the Buddhist point of view, it's all action. And it all has an effect. It all shapes the kind of person that we become. Even just what we're thinking. We have certain habitual thought patterns, and it shapes the kind of person we become. Yeah? And it also shapes the world. It has an effect on other people. Our words, our actions, even our thoughts has an effect on the world and other people. So it's action in that kind of broad, deep sense on the level of body, speech and mind. Yeah? And yes, the idea is that everything we're doing in that sense, body, speech and mind, has an effect on us, shapes our mind,
and then that shapes how we're likely to respond to things in the future. Yeah.
So I heard a story recently of, it was from India, which is a very traditional society, and somebody, a man, actually a man in our order, had an affair with a married woman. And of course, in the context of India, that causes all sorts of trouble and is quite destructive. Causes all sorts of problems with all sorts of relationships everywhere. So someone was saying to him, why did you do it? Why did you do it? You know it was going to end in tears. Why did you do that? And apparently he said, I did it because I thought it. I did it because I thought it. And what he meant was, he'd just been dwelling on something in his mind. You know, he'd fallen in love. He dwelled on it in his mind. He couldn't put it out of his mind. And that created a kind of a tendency, a kind of groove in his mind, which kind of got deeper and deeper and deeper. Until one day he found himself in the situation where he could act on it. And because of all that, everything he'd done with his mind, he couldn't stop himself. Do you know what I mean? There was just such a momentum. It was just such a kind of strength of emotion, strength of volition, that suddenly he found himself acting out what had previously just been going on in his mind. Yeah? So, yeah, from the Buddhist point of view, what we do with our minds is so important. Yeah? I mean, that's quite a strong example. But all the time we're doing things with our minds. We're dwelling on things, positive things, negative things, harmful things, skillful things. And it's all having an effect. It's all just sort of creating these kind of grooves, these kind of channels, these habits in our mind. And once they're there, it just takes the right circumstances and they will kind of come to fruition. Yeah. So I might dwell on someone a little bit irritatedly, and then some situation happens and I find myself vocalising it. It just kind of comes out. Yeah. And that works in a skillful direction as well. Yeah, we spend time cultivating or dwelling on gratitude, dwelling on all the things that we feel grateful for. Well, that creates a different tendency in our mind. So from the Buddhist point of view, what we're doing in our minds is absolutely kind of crucial. And even if it seems trivial, even if it seems harmless, you know, a lot of what we do with our minds, it is fairly harmless. You know, I just have a little fantasy going. In a way, it sort of seems fairly harmless. But actually, it all adds up to a kind of tendency of the mind. And that eventually adds up to our life, to who we actually are, what actually happens to us, who we actually become. Yeah. So, yeah, the whole business of integration that we were looking at is kind of knowing, seeing this process, knowing what's going on, kind of getting to know what we do with our minds. And the whole business of positive emotion or skillful action is trying to make the right choices of what we do with our minds. Trying to make skillful, helpful, kind, human, ethical choices about where we direct our attention. Where we're going to be kind of creating those kind of habits, tendencies, momentums of the mind, as it were. So yes, skillful action, or you could say skillful volition. It's all about volition, yeah. Or even intention. Yeah, it's about intention. Yeah. So there's that. It's one of Blake's proverbs, isn't there? The truth that's told with bad intent beats all the lies hell can invent. Something like that. The truth that's told with bad intent beats all the lies hell can invent. It might not be spot on right, but you get the gist, yeah? So it's about intention. You might say something that's factually true, but if you've said it with an intention to wind somebody up or to harm somebody or, you know, or to kind of get what you want, if there's an unskillful intention behind it, actually that's the kind of groove that you're creating in your mind, and that's the kind of effect you're going to be having on the world and on other people. Yeah? So it's very much about intention. It's not about actions as they may appear on the surface. It's about the state of mind that underlies them, that motivates them. Yeah?
It's about intention. It's about volition. It's about skillful action in that sense.
And Maitreya Bandhu says there's three sort of qualities of positive emotion or skillful action. So firstly, it is emotional. Yeah, so that's why this phrase is a good phrase, because it shows that it's not just something in our head, it's also in the heart. It's about kindness, it's about awareness of others, orientating out the world and others. Just find my notes. Yes. It's about a kind of emotional richness. It's maybe about being robust and resilient, yeah. Able to be in difficult situations and stay positive, stay in touch with what's skillful. It's got a component of energy. So someone who's emotionally positive, often they're bright, aren't they? Bright, energetic, vital, focused, engaged. And it has a kind of cognitive element. So when we're in an emotionally positive state, I'd say we can think more clearly. We can think more clearly, we can see things more clearly. Yeah. When I was thinking about this, I thought, well, hang on. When someone's angry, sometimes they have there's a real sort of fierce, cutting clarity to anger. And actually there can be, kind of hatred sometimes does have that kind of quality, doesn't it? But it's quite narrow. Yeah, just see something that it wants to kind of destroy. Yeah, whereas positive emotion, the clarity of positive emotion is much more kind of broad, much more flexible. You can see things from different points of view. You know, someone says something to me, I think, oh yeah, that's interesting. And I'm able to look at it from a different point of view when I'm in a positive mental state. But negative emotion can't do that. Someone says something to me that I don't like, and I just can't think like that. I just don't want to know. Yeah. So although negative emotion sometimes has a certain kind of clarity, there's a kind of narrowness and rigidity to it. Yeah. Whereas the cognitive quality of positive emotion is open, flexible, pliable. So it's much, much more clear in that kind of sense. So yes, good to bear those in mind. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about a quality of the heart, quality of awareness of others. We're talking about a kind of brightness and engagement with life. And we're talking about a certain quality of mind, a sort of open, flexible, thoughtful, intelligent quality of mind. So what we're going to do today is we're going to look at a model which shows maybe how sometimes we don't do this and how we practice to kind of get back to this. And it's a model about papancha, proliferation, the kind of thoughts that sometimes proliferate in our mind when we're under the sway of negative emotion. So we talked about this a little bit in previous weeks, and we're going to come back to it now and just look at it in a little bit more depth. So this is a little model that I'll talk through for how we can sometimes respond in certain situations and get into this proliferating thinking, which is called papancha in the Buddhist tradition. So for those of you, some of you might recognise this. It's from a teaching of the Buddha called the Honeyball Sutta. The Honeyball Sutta. So if anyone's interested in the sources and the references, that's where it's from. But I've sort of tried to make the terminology a bit more accessible. So the honey, it's a weird name, isn't it? The Honeyball Sutta, a ball of honey. There's a story behind that, but I won't go into that now. So a situation arises. Yeah, we meet somebody, somebody says something, we have a thought, an image comes into our mind. A situation arises, yeah. And it triggers vedana, or feeling. Yeah, it triggers vedana, or feeling. So Buddhism says we're always coming into contact with things. We're always having experiences. And it's always kind of tinged, or more than tinged, with some feeling response.
Yeah.
So you see someone and immediately there's a like kind of a little sense of pleasure, or maybe a little sense of discomfort or pain, or maybe a kind of just in the middle neutral feeling.
Yeah.
Or somebody says something, yeah. Or someone puts a plate of chocolate biscuits down in front of you, or yeah. So that all the time there are experiences happening, and all the time, whether we know it or not, whether we're conscious of it or not, there are kind of feeling responses going on, pleasant, painful, or neutral. And these feeling responses are conditioned by our previous experience.
Yeah.
So if someone walks in the room now that I had a bad argument with last week, it'll probably trigger a painful feeling. Yeah. So due to my past emotions and past volitions, in the present now, a certain kind of feeling is triggered off.
Yeah.
If someone walks in the room that last week I had a really wonderful day out in London with, there'll be a pleasant feeling is triggered. So situation arises. This is just the mind doing what the mind does. And then the mind starts to interpret that experience.
Yeah.
Recognition, perception, we label things, we categorise.
Yeah.
So I say, oh, it's so-and-so. Oh, it's good to see you. Yeah. My mind kind of labels, recognises a whole process of perception.
Yeah.
And so far, all of this is ethically neutral. Yeah. Even if a painful feeling comes, it's not like we've chosen that. It's just come because of our past experience.
Yeah.
It's not us deciding anything or acting anything. There isn't volition involved. It's just an experience kind of coming to us. Yeah. And the same with this. That's what the mind does. You know, you see somebody, and automatically your mind goes, "Oh, it's Tom." You can't help it. It's just. When it is Tom, that's what I'm saying. It's a helpful thing. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
So perception kicks in.
Yeah.
Then what happens is sometimes we might carry on thinking about that thing in a kind of helpful, aware, conscious kind of way. But sometimes the mind goes into overdrive. The mind kind of kicks in trying to explain that feeling that we've had.
Yeah.
So this is papancha. This is papancha, which is this Buddhist word which means something like proliferation or elaboration or amplification.
Yeah.
So I suppose particularly if it's a painful experience, which we don't want to be having, our mind sort of sets to work saying, you know, why is this happening? Oh, it's because it's that irritating person that I met last week, and they, you know, blah, 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 blah. Off we go into a story, which is trying to kind of explain and control and contain the feeling that we're having.
Yeah.
And again, it's conditioned by past action, by past emotion and volition, by karma.
Yeah.
So if that person walks into the room that, yeah, I've had a difficult time with in the past and maybe acted unskillfully towards in the past, there's a very strong kind of momentum in me, very strong kind of tendency just for the mind to kind of kick in, certain thought patterns just to kind of repeat themselves. Yeah. Or sometimes it's not the same person that walks into the room, but it's just, I don't know, a situation arises that's similar to something else that happened. And so an old pattern just comes in, because that's what we do all the time. We're sort of pattern matching, aren't we? And so something arises, it makes us feel a certain way, and so we look for a similar kind of pattern that it matches, and then again a certain habitual, a certain kind of groove chunters into being.
Yeah.
So this kind of thought, it's unaware, just kind of chunters on without us almost knowing about it, or, you know, consciously choosing it, as it were. Tends to be a bit obsessive, and it tends to be repetitive and circular.
Yeah.
So you know the kind of thing I mean, probably, you know, just telling a story. We create a story which is trying to explain the situation that we find ourselves in. And also it tends to exaggerate or minimise. So if it's a difficult person that walks in the room, I tend to exaggerate their negative qualities. I tend to exaggerate what it is that makes me feel unpleasant, painful feeling. So it kind of distorts. It distorts, but I don't really see what's there. I don't really see that person fully in a rounded kind of fashion. I just exaggerate what it is, but the feeling that I don't want to be experiencing. Or sometimes we exaggerate the positive features. So, I don't know, if I've just walked past the shop and I've seen an iPhone 23 in the window, and it's triggered a feeling of pleasure. It's an iPhone 23. And so my mind goes into overdrive, thinking of all the reasons why that would be a wonderful thing to have, and it would totally change my life for the better. I'd suddenly become a really organised person. Blah, 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 blah. So the mind, just kind of constructs a story, an interpretation, which is triggered by the feeling, by the experience. So we construct a story or a view and an interpretation, and we take that. That becomes our reality. So we're more and more living up here in our heads, and that becomes our reality. And then we act on the basis of that story, that interpretation. And of course, if we do that, it's often self-fulfilling. We act in a certain way that the world will then, it'll be self-fulfilling in that way. So to give a few examples of this, just little silly examples in a way, but in a way this is what's going on a lot of the time in our minds and in our lives. Maya Traoband uses this example of a girl he knows, a young girl who her school friend tells her she can't draw. You can't draw. And the girl internalises that story. And so what happens? A situation arises. She goes to school one day and the teacher says, "Okay, children, this morning we're going to do some drawing." And instead of feeling, "Oh, great, it's not maths, it's drawing," this girl has a feeling of pain because her friends told her she can't draw. So her mind then goes, "Oh, I can't draw, I'm useless, and this is going to be horrible, I'm going to hate it." So she creates a kind of story around that painful feeling, uncomfortable feeling. And then Maya Traoband makes the point, he says, "Well, of course, when you're in that state, you can't draw. You can't be creative. You won't dare to make mistakes or try anything because it's just..." Do you see what I mean? So the story becomes real. The story becomes self-fulfilling. It just confirms. Her experience then goes on to confirm what she thought, which means next time that situation arises, all that feeling and all that story is going to be there even stronger. So it's just a little example, but in a way, it's a shame, isn't it? It's a real shame that that's what's going on for that person. I've got a situation in my life at the moment where there's a certain person in my life who gets quite anxious and phones me up quite a lot in a bit of a negative state. So in my life at the moment, a situation arises when my phone rings and I look at the number and immediately a feeling is triggered. Bang. I tense up. And I feel uncomfortable and I feel resistance. And, my mind recognises the phone number and, kind of makes a match with previous phone calls that I've had. And then I go into overdrive. "Oh, God, it's so-and-so again. And I bet they're going to be in a real bad state. And, why do they have to bother me all the time? And it's not fair. Blah, 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 blah." Off I go, I construct a story. I mean, maybe they're in a really good mood. Or maybe they're phoning me up to say, "Thanks for that phone chat yesterday. It was really helpful." But I don't consider that. I just, my mind just goes straight down a certain channel, certain story, certain interpretation, certain exaggeration. And of course then that probably means I answer the phone differently. Yeah? So perhaps I'm rather tense. Hello? Yeah? And of course, well, what's that going to be like for them? And how does that mean they're likely to answer the phone, you know, then carry on the conversation with me? Because they'll have all their stuff going on as well, don't they? Do you see what I mean? So this is how we create the world. This is how we create our reality. Quite a lot through just what we're thinking. Just what we're thinking. Yeah, we change reality. We actually create the world, change the world through what we're thinking. Every moment of our lives. Yeah? At every moment we're making a kind of choice. This is where the choice is. This is the area of choice. Yeah? How are we going to think about this? And what reality will that create? Yeah. So you'll notice I've put here primary reality and secondary reality. Yeah? So it's like we, through thought, well, through unaware, unhelpful thought, because yeah, it's important to realise it's not thought that's the problem. It's a certain kind of thought. It's a certain kind of thought driven by negative emotion. Yeah? You know, sometimes we're in a positive state and we think very clearly and helpful about things. Thought can be wonderful and creative and insightful. Yeah? So it's not thought that's the problem. It's a particular kind of thought. But out of that thought, yes, we create a secondary reality. And actually, this is what's really going on. This is what's true. This is reality. This is a kind of secondary, kind of heady reality that we kind of create for ourselves. Yeah. So I'll just say a little bit more, and then we'll stop and have a bit of discussion and questions. Yeah. So Maitreya Bandhu talks about two trainings. So these are going to be possible practice suggestions for the coming week. And we maybe explore them next week in the meditations. Let's see. Two trainings, yeah? So the first training is, you know, either when we're meditating or even just as we're going about our life. It's when we notice this going on, when we notice the pancha kicking in, just coming back to the primary reality. That's our first job. Yeah, just saying, what is true? What's my actual experience? Yeah. What's my actual experience? Yeah. How do I feel? Yeah. What, you know, what's going on in my body? What's going on in my heart? What's going on in my mind? So trying to kind of come out of the secondary reality and come back to our actual, direct, real, true experience. Yeah. So that involves dropping the papancha. Dropping the papancha, just seeing, oh look, here I go again. I'm telling that story. I need to put this aside and just come back to what I'm actually feeling. What's actually kind of going on in this situation. What this person is really saying to me or not. Yeah. So that's partly a practice of mindfulness. Just being in our experience and sort of experiencing that more fully and deeply. But it also involves this positive emotion. It also involves skillful volition, because we've got to choose to do that. When we're in this, we've got to be aware and integrated enough to notice. And then we've got to make the choice to kind of drop that, put it to one side and come back to our experience. So that's the first training that Maitreya Bandhu talks about. And then the second training is to notice, so that's coming back to the primary reality. And then Maitreya Bandhu also talks about, well, trying to notice the Vedana, the feeling of papancha. Yeah, so when we are in this, it's quite a subtle thing, isn't it? But just sort of trying to step back from it enough that we can kind of see what we're doing and we can kind of feel what it's like. Try and kind of get a feel for it, for its texture, for its kind of energy. So it's quite subtle, because it's not getting sucked into it and going off into the thoughts, but it's trying to sort of, in a way, get a bit underneath it and see what's the kind of feeling of this and what's the feeling that's kind of driving it. And this is really important, because part of what we need to do when we're practicing, if we're trying to change ourselves, trying to change our mind, is we need to be able to be with our feelings without either blocking off from them. That's one thing we tend to do, is we deny them or we repress them, or just acting on them, just kind of being taken off into a certain action or reaction by them. Yeah, we're trying to kind of stay in the middle, as it were. Not block off, not just be whisked off into action, reacting to our feelings, but just being with our feelings, just kind of containing them, holding them, experiencing them. And that kind of creates a space in which we can decide what's a skillful response to this, what's a skillful response to this. Yeah. So, and that's a real kind of art, as it were, just to be able to stay with experiences. So, yeah. The difficult person walks into the room, I feel uncomfortable. Yeah? And so there's an art of just being, okay, I feel uncomfortable. Being with this person makes me feel uncomfortable. Just acknowledging that, but not going off into blame, being responsible for my own feelings, and then choosing what's the best response. And I might think, even though I feel uncomfortable, I'm going to go up to them and I'm going to say hello. I'm going to try and be friendly. Yeah? So I'm not being ruled by the feeling, but nor am I denying the feeling or blocking off from it. Yeah. Or maybe I'm bored one day. I'm sitting at home bored on a Sunday afternoon, and there's a tendency to kind of go and distract myself on the internet. And again, I decide, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to stay with this feeling. And I'm not going to deny it. I'm not just going to just kind of let it whisk me off. I'm just going to stay with this feeling. And sometimes if we do that, eventually something else arises, we get in touch with something a bit more deeper. Yeah? Or we think, actually, no, I could go for a walk, or it's something more kind of skillful, something more helpful occurs to us. Yeah? So, yeah, if we're going to change our habits, our tendencies, we need that ability to stay with feeling and not immediately respond in a kind of unskillful kind of way. So again, it involves awareness and integration, but it also involves volition. It's making a choice of what not to do, you know, not going into the pancha, not just acting out on the basis of that pancha. So those are the two trainings, and maybe in a bit we'll see how they might relate to our practice in the week. But perhaps I should just stop there and see if there's any questions. Anything that needs clarifying a bit.
I have a question. What I've found is that I often get in touch with the feeling and then it's overwhelming. And because I'm overwhelmed, I can't think straight.
Right.
All that just seems impossible, because that involves a certain clarity that I feel, well, I'm not going to do that. Stay with my feeling, I'm going to do that. But often feelings are quite overwhelming, and when feelings are overwhelming, your brain just goes a bit, ugh.
Yeah.
So I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
But how do you... Feelings often make your brain quite fuzzy.
Yeah.
Or mine.
Yeah.
So have you got a simple way of doing that with overwhelming feelings? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, yeah. Mm. The magical solution.
That would be nice.
Has anyone got any suggestions or thoughts about that? It's a good question.
That's based on years of experience.
Mm. Easy to say, not quite so easy to do. Coming back to the body. Mm. Say, okay, what is going... So there's an overwhelm, and sometimes it can take us up either in just a very particular feeling in our chest or in our heads. Well, actually, so coming back to the body and the broader base of experience, just to remember that we've got feet on the ground or bum on the seat, or, you know, the temperature is such and such.
I think that's what I sort of think, that's being with the feeling, that is the making the choice bit requires a kind of, you know, you wear the feeling, you wear your feet, you wear it all. But the choice bit doesn't come because I'm just like, blimey. Whoa, this is powerful. And it's that, what do I do now, except feel overwhelmed. But often that doesn't feel very skillful or very helpful. Or, you know, you don't want to be feeling overwhelmed if you doesn't feel very creative, I promise.
Can you kind of ask yourself, can you ask yourself where in the body specifically you're feeling?
I think those kind of questions require a certain not feeling overwhelmed, just to ask the question.
Perhaps practice it while you're sitting in meditation and then later on take that out into the world.
Yeah, I just think I have a problem with even asking, being reflective enough.
If I felt really overwhelmed at home, I'd sometimes just got down the floor, or like just get down on the floor and go into child's pose. And really just think, I've got to nurture myself and just stop now and just sort of come down and ground yourself. And then the body begins, I feel, the body begins to settle. And the mind does begin to settle. So it's perhaps coming back to the body, but something about getting down on the ground is really grounding and healing. And it holds you. And you just sort of allow your breath to settle and the body. Even talking about it makes me feel a bit, because I've been in situations like that, and it does work for me.
One of the things that I feel is that these things don't necessarily happen instantaneously.
Mm.
It takes a little bit of time. So you might notice that you're feeling overwhelmed, and that's where you start. But it's just somehow just kind of being still with that, just trying to relax into that, give it space and time. And the overwhelm does tend to diminish, and the more kind of conscious awareness grows. But not to sort of feel, because there's a tendency with overwhelm for that to get bigger and bigger and bigger, you know. But just, I don't know, sitting, breathing, relaxing, letting the and giving it just that little bit of time, it'll kind of calm down, and then something else can come into place. Yeah? Because we tend to think we've got to do this thing instantaneously.
Yeah.
It's not like that. Our minds don't work that quickly.
Mm.
It, you know, we need a half a minute or so for this to start to happen, yeah?
Yeah, that's quite helpful, yeah. So I suppose the creative act there is just being with it.
Stay with it.
And waiting.
That's the direct experience.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's the creative bit.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And that's quite helpful.
I find it helpful to say, I am overwhelmed.
Yeah.
To acknowledge that.
So that's the primary reality.
Yeah.
That is the reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the experience that you're having.
Mm. And if you're lucky,
that's that poem that comes to mind about walking down the street and falling down a hole.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Can anyone remember that?
Yes.
Yeah. Because, again, it makes the point of how it's a gradual process. You don't learn not to go down the street and fall down the hole straight away.
Yeah.
You just gradually learn it. And one day you realise, oh, I don't actually have to go down that street. But it's through going, falling down the hole lots of times.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are habits. They've got energy. You can't just stop them. Yeah.
Oh, that's
what it's saying in the Dhammapada, if it's seeking this experience is preceded by mind, by mind, produced by mind. So there's that whole chain of cause and effect.
Mm.
You know, our experience is what we make it, and we just sit with the experience and acknowledge it.
Mm.
As Vijayashree was saying, it's that sitting with it but not judging it. It is just your experience.
Mm.
You don't have to do anything with it. You've always got a choice. You can just sit with it, and the experience will dissipate.
Mm.
It will, it's just a natural thing, because guess what, there's another experience coming down the track right at you. So it will change. That's what the Buddha's saying in the Dhammapada.
Yes.
Yeah, I suppose choice doesn't have to be an action, it can just be choosing to be less judgmental.
I feel when I feel overwhelmed, I acknowledge that I am overwhelmed, but also say, I'm not going to make any decision right now,
yeah.
It's too much, it's too strong, let me go for a walk,
yeah.
And let me come back to it when I feel a little bit more calmer, and I can deal with it,
yeah.
And often helps in works like that.
Yeah. That's a really good point, yeah. So, it's exactly that. you can't expect yourself to know the answer in the heat of the situation always. That takes a lot of practice. Sometimes we just have to stop and kind of remove ourselves, and then that allows us to get into a state where the mind can start reflecting a bit more, and then we'll know what to do. Yeah. So that's very well put.
But also more space. Sometimes you can feel really compressed with these feelings, like you have no air, and it's almost like hitting a ceiling. So sometimes I'll imagine the interplanetary system, just go up in the sky, and there's lots of room to move around, but, so it's not your whole experience.
It's hard to take that pause if there's someone sitting in front of you. Triggered this feeling.
Yeah.
Because if you spend pause, you don't answer, they think you're being a bit funny, and that irritates them and can exacerbate the situation.
Yeah, it's really difficult, isn't it? I mean, that's why the Buddha used this word skillful. Because it's a real skill. Just to say, you've said something to me that has had quite a strong effect on me, but I don't quite know what I feel about it yet. Can't answer you straight away, I'm sorry. But to have the self-presence to do that in the moment, it's I'm not saying it's easy, but that's what we're trying to learn, isn't it? How can we just be a bit more skillful, a bit more skillful, and then a bit more skillful?
I think that's really true. I find it takes me time to work to know what I'm feeling.
Time out.
So it's really good, isn't it? Take the pressure off yourself.
Take
the pressure off yourself to have to know. There's a Buddhist text called the Sutra of Golden Light. It talks about the oppression of the moment. The oppression of the moment. I've got to know what to do. Maybe we can take that pressure off ourselves. Okay, a little bit away of time, so I'm just going to make some practice suggestions for the week, and then we'll have some time in little huddles. So there's those two trainings. So either in your meditation practice or as you're going about your life, just when you notice papancha kicking in, trying to come back to your experience, the body, the breath, how you're feeling and so on. And also, the second training, trying to notice the Vedana, the feeling of the papancha, trying to kind of get underneath it a little bit, Which is, it's not easy. Sometimes it happens so fast, sometimes it's so sort of subtle, But just, if you find yourself in a state of papancha, just what does this feel like? What's the kind of feeling that's motivating this? See, experiment. Just see if you can kind of get underneath that a little bit. So if we do that, we're basically pulling back from negative emotion. So to do those things that I've just described, those trainings, we're stopping the process going this way. We're kind of pulling back from the papancha. But Maitreya Banda also makes the point that we also need to cultivate. So that's sort of trying to prevent negative emotion, as it were. And Maitreya Banda also makes the point that we also need to try and cultivate positive emotion. He calls it fostering emotional strength. So trying to cultivate the positive as well as eliminate the negative. And don't mess with Mr. In Between. I'm not going to sing it, but... So a few suggestions for cultivating the positive. Well, one is gratitude. So we did the gratitude meditation earlier on. So just trying to have that awareness of what we received, of everything we received. He makes the suggestion of every day, at the end of the day, writing 5 things that we feel grateful for that day. However big or small they are, just a kind of gratitude diary. You could just take that on as a practice for a week or two and see if it has an effect. I bet you it will. I bet you it'll lift you emotionally. It'll just kind of change your experience that bit. So just practicing awareness of gratitude in that sense. And who knows, if you practice that, you might even spontaneously find yourself expressing more gratitude as you go about your life. And then his other suggestion is just to try ordinary acts of giving. So I'm sure we all do these anyway, but could we kind of up that a little bit? Could we just consciously try and practice giving a little bit more? Just making someone a cup of tea, thinking of, oh, so-and-so, I'll send them a card because they're moving house next week. Whatever it is, just those small but thoughtful acts of giving, of generosity, of kind of going beyond ourselves into awareness of somebody else. So his suggestion is one a day. One a day. Yeah? Not five a day. Just start with one a day. Yeah, that's probably enough suggestions, and that's four things. That's plenty to be going on. So let's have 12 and a half minutes in groups. I suggest twos or threes, because the bigger the group is, the less time there is for each person. So I suggest twos or threes. Talk about what you'd like to practice in the next week. That might be carrying on with something that's really working for you, or it might be choosing something new to do with positive emotion. Yeah? Does that make enough sense? Mm-hmm. Great. I'll ring a bell in about 11 and a half minutes.